As we come to this wonderful time of studying God's Word today, we are in Lesson 8 of the book of Leviticus. And we are in chapter 11. So if you want to open your Bible and follow along and make notes there if you wish, chapter 11 of the book of Leviticus. So here in Lesson 8, we come to the first listing of clean and unclean foods. It's the law of clean and unclean foods. And I want to tell you, this listing as we go through it is going to be severely restricted from the original list of animals and vegetation that man was allowed to eat following the departure from Noah's Ark 1,090 years before this instruction in the book of Leviticus was given to the nation of Israel and to the Jews. Totally restricted. So I want to go back, if you do not mind, I want to go back to Genesis chapter 9 for just a moment to begin this. And I want us to hear again what the Lord told Noah when he and his wife and his three sons and three daughter-in-laws left the ark and went out into the world to live. And here's the instruction that the Lord gave Noah concerning what they could eat and what they could not eat. Genesis chapter 9, verse 3 says this: "Every moving thing that is alive shall be food for you. I give all to you, as I gave the green plants. Only you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is the blood. Surely I will require your lifeblood. From every beast I will require it. And from every man, and from every man's brother, I will require the life of man. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For in the image of God he made man." So what the Lord is telling Noah here is, everything that moves and is alive, you can eat it as food with every green plant that you already were eating, except you cannot eat man. Man, you cannot. In fact, the other part about that is even when you eat something that can move, you have to drain the blood out of it. You can't eat the blood. The Lord did not want any blood eaten. And we found that in the offerings. The blood was always sprinkled and spilt out down in the coals and the ashes and around the altar and whatever. It never was to be eaten. So Noah could eat anything as long as the blood was drained out of it, and he could not kill a man and eat it because man was made in the image of God. Every animal that moved was food for Noah and his family. Everyone that lived on earth, until Leviticus chapter 11, where this instruction is coming, everyone on earth could eat anything that moved except for humans. And with the giving of this instruction, now the nation of Israel is the only nation that has to restrict what it eats. It can no longer eat everything that is on earth. It now is restricted to just what the Lord has said, clean and is unclean. Well, what about the rest of the earth? Everybody that's not Jewish that lives around them and in the rest of the world, they can still eat anything that they desire. It is theirs for food. They are not restricted. The rest of the world still can eat all the plants and animals, just like the instruction that was given to Noah. So for the nation of Israel, the Lord had a new food plan, a new menu. And through Moses, he provided the law of the clean and the unclean foods. So he will begin with the clean and the unclean foods of the land, move to the sea, to the air, and then, of course, to insects and things like that. So as an introduction to this section, we hear the Lord speaking to Moses in chapter 11, and we go to verse 1. "The Lord spoke again to Moses and to Aaron, saying to them, 'Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, these are the creatures which you may eat from all the animals that are on the earth. So when the Lord says the animals that are on the earth, it's a better translation would be all the animals on the land, because he's going to talk about land animals is where he's going. And the reason for this is because in this section, the Lord begins with the land animals, and then he moves to the water animals, and then to the flying animals. And so then he will summarize some special instructions that deal with all the different three kinds of animals. So that's where we're headed here. So the law calls the animals as clean that have a divided or a split hoof, and they chew the cud, and this is in verse 3. Whatever divides the hoof, thus making split hoofs, and chews the cud among the animals that you may eat. Okay, first, after the animal swallows the food, it goes into a pouch that's called the rumen. And if that animal has that rumen, the animal can then bring that food back up into its mouth. Now it is called the cud. And it backs up into the mouth, and he chews it again, and he swallows it. And he may do it several times. Some animals chew their cuds several times before it finally goes into the stomach for full digestion. So that's what a cud is. Now, second, the animal must have a completely what's called cloven or split hoof. That means the hoof, it's split into two toes. So pretend this is my hoof. If you have seen a horse, it has a totally round hoof, so a horse we're not to eat. But if we split that hoof like this, that is an animal they can eat if they chew their cud. So this may seem like a general statement that fits all the animals that have a divided toe, a divided hoof, or chews the cud, but it's not. That's not what the Lord intends. The two go together. With the animals, they must have a split hoof and chew the cud. It can't be one or the other. It has to be both of them together. One goes together with the other. Now, examples of clean animals that fit this criteria are the bovine, the cattle, such as the ox, whether it be a cow or whatever. Any type of the bovine family of oxen. It can be the sheep, the deer, the goat, gazelle, a roebuck, ibex, an antelope. This is by far not an exhausted list. So any of these animals that chew the cud and have that divided hoof, they are edible. But the Lord goes on to tell the nation of Israel that if the animal has one of the two but not the other, the animal is unclean. And he gives examples. Verse 4. Nevertheless, you are not to eat of these among those which chew the cud or among those which divide the hoof, such as the camel, for though it chews cud, it does not divide the hoof. It is unclean to you. First example is the camel. The camel, which will be prevalent in the Promised Land, by the way, is an unclean animal because it does not have the two criteria. It chews it, but it does not have a split hoof. So, in the unclean camel family, we've got the alpaca, the llama, the regular camel, the Bactrian camel, the dromedary, all these in this camel family that choose the cub, but their hoof is not split like the splitting of the antelope and the cow and the goat and that type. Now the second example is the same as the camel, and it's another unclean animal. It's called a chafan, or what we would call a rock badger, in verse 5. Likewise, the chafan, for though it chews the cud, it is not divided the hoof. It is unclean to you. That's verse 5. So the rock badger chews its cud, but it does not have a split hoof. So the rock badger is found only in parts of Africa, by the way, and extreme southwestern Asia. It's not related to the badgers that we know today, so don't think about the two as the same. They're not even related. And even if it was, the badger, we know, are also unclean, so it doesn't make any difference. If it's a badger, it's a badger, it's unclean. Rather, its closest relatives are the elephants and the manatees, which are also unclean animals to the Jews. So these badgers are unclean. Now the next one you're going to be surprised at. The rabbit or the hare is also an unclean food for the Jews. Verse 6. The rabbit also, for though it chews cud, it does not divide the hoof. It is unclean to you. The reason why it is unclean is the same as the camel and the rock badger. It chews the cud, but it does not have a split hoof. So what is the difference between a rabbit and a hare? I know you want to know what the difference is, because most of us look at one and we can't tell the one between the other, but actually we can. First of all, the rabbit is much smaller than the hare. It's just a little bitty. Now, you can't tell that whenever they're being born, when they're just a few weeks old, but when they're fully grown, you can tell a rabbit's much smaller than the hare. It also, a rabbit has much shorter ears than a hare. Hare has really long ears, rabbit has short ears. The rabbit is also born blind and is born furless, and it needs its mother to help with it until it is weaned. Now the hare is born fully with its eyes open, it is fully furred, and in fact within just a few hours after it is born, it can begin to fend for itself. So although they are both in what we would call the rabbit family and they are related, they are a little bit different between the two. But they're unclean to the Jew. Next, the pig comes along, and we all know the pig. Then the Lord gives an example, and it is the pig that has a split hoof. So he switched from those that don't have a split hoof to those that do have a split hoof but do not chew the cud, and that is here in verse 7. And the pig, for though it divides the hoof, thus making a split hoof, it does not chew cud. It is unclean to you. So some might ask the question, what is the difference between a pig and a hog? Well, a pig is any family member of what is called the genus Sus. A hog is a domesticated subspecies of any one of the different family members of the genus Sus. In other words, any pig that is found in the wild, if it is brought in and domesticated, it is usually considered a hog, except for some hogs that have become feral in different places, get out and they just take over. We have them down in the Pine Brook area over in Clear Lake. They are all over. Feral hogs are all over Texas, and they are just overrunning Texas. So hogs and pigs, hogs are pigs, but they are domesticated. In other words, they're not the varieties that we're talking about. Hogs and pigs of any species, it doesn't matter what kind of hog or pig it is unclean to the Jews. They cannot eat it. But what about the handling of unclean animals? Because the Lord covers that next. Could a Jew become unclean by handling one of these animals that is not clean because it doesn't have a split hoof and chews the cud? If he touches an animal, if he touches a hog, if he touches a pig or a hare, does he become unclean? Well, verse 8 answers that. You shall not eat their flesh nor touch their carcasses, and for they are unclean to you. So in other words, a Jew cannot eat one of these unclean animals, and they cannot touch their carcasses. Now, the word carcasses means their dead body. So even though they may shoo one away or get one out of the pen or whatever, one of these dead animals, or they may use them for carrying loads and things like the camel, they are not to eat them, and they are not to touch their dead carcass. As soon as they touch their dead carcass or dead body, they are unclean. So the prohibition at this point in the instruction concerning the handling of these animals does not make them unclean to the Jew, except for they cannot be eaten and their dead bodies cannot be touched. Now, if one of these animals dies, a Jew is not to dispose of the animal. That is not the point of this verse, though. Rather, the point of this verse 8 is that the dead animal, which must be dead to be eaten, cannot be eaten because it is an unclean animal to begin with. So you're not supposed to touch dead animals, and to eat something, you have to touch its dead carcass. And that it's unclean to begin with, so therefore you can't eat it anyway. Now, for the examples of the clean and the unclean animals of the land, the Lord returns to the clean and unclean animals of the sea. Now, for food, the sea animals were clean, get this, if they had fins and scales. Remember, the land animals had to have a split hoof and chew a cud. That's the land animals they could eat. In the sea animals, they had to have fins and scales. Verse 9. These you may eat, whatever is in the water, all that have fins and scales. Those in the water, in the seas, or in the rivers, you may eat. Well, a scale is a rigid plate that grows up on the skin of the animal, the fish. In fish, they're like dermal scales formed from mesoderm, by the way. And they function to resist strong water currents, and they act as a protective barrier to that fish, a protective armor. And the way they are formed allows the fish to move with great ease. And many water animals have fins, but not all have scales. The fins are used to propel that animal and guide that animal through the water. It, in this case, fins and scales are required for the fish to be the clean and edible kind. The two go together, and both must be in place for the animal to be a clean animal. So just as the land animals, the Lord explains that water animals that do not have both fins and scales are unclean. Verse 10. But whatever is in the seas and in the rivers that does not have fins and scales, among all the teeming life of the water and among all the living creatures that are in the water, they are detestable things to you, and they shall be abhorrent to you. You may not eat of their flesh, and their carcasses you shall detest. Whatever in the water does not have fins and scales is abhorrent to you. So as a fisherman, and the Jews will be quite fishermen in the Promised Land, it is impossible to fish without catching water creatures without fins and without scales. But they are not to be eaten when they're caught. And even if they die, they are not to be eaten. They are unclean. What are we talking about here? We're talking about shellfish like shrimp, crayfish, crab, lobsters, clams, scallops, oysters, mussels, corals, eels like snakes in the water that flow through the water. They're examples of creatures. Those are examples of creatures that do not have fins or scales and are unclean for Jews to eat. Now, in general, all of these animals survive on the waste of other animals, their refuse. In other words, their waste from their bodies. And because they eat the unclean excrement from the bodies of these other animals, they're unclean. It does not mean that the Jew cannot touch them. It means that they cannot be eaten. Now the Lord turns to the animals that fly. The unclean fowl he addresses first. He addresses those things that are unclean rather than clean first in verse 13. These, moreover, you shall detest among the birds. They are abhorrent, not to be eaten. The eagle and the vulture and the buzzard and the kite and the falcon in its kind, every raven in its kind, the ostrich and the owl and the seagull and the hawk in its kind, and the little owl and the cormorant and the great owl and the white owl and the pelican and the carrion vulture and the stork, the heron in its kind, and the hoopoe and the bat. Reading the list, it is quite easy to see why these fowl are unclean. They all survive off of dead, decaying carcasses. They're scavengers. And because they eat that which is unclean, they are considered unclean for the Jews to eat. So moving from the clean and unclean fowl, which we know the clean are two turtle doves and pigeons and things like that, things that don't eat off of dead, but eat off of plants and seeds, the Lord moves on immediately to the unclean insects that walk on all fours. Now get this, verse 20. All the winged insects that walk on all fours are detestable to you. So he's talking about the birds that fly that are detestable, and now he's gone to the insects that fly that are detestable. So here we have a slight little problem, a theological problem that I want to take a little time here and explain to you in case you run across it ever again. Wycliffe translated this verse as follows: all thing of fowls that goeth on 4 feet shall be abominable to you. Tyndale translated this verse as follows: and all fowls that creep and go up all fours shall be abominable unto you. Okay. Both used the word fowls, and that was carried on all the way through the King James Bible that I grew up on and I loved, that said, all fowls that creep, going on all fours, shall be an abomination unto you. But all the modern translations, they're using the word insects, including the New King James, which is also one of my favorite Bibles. By the way, you ask me what my favorite Bible is. My favorite Bible is the Bible I have in my hand at the time. All of the Bibles are my favorite Bibles. I have some that are favorite to me for one reason or another for different things, but all Bibles are my favorite Bibles, and I love the New King James and I love the Old King James. When you hear me quote a verse, I struggle to quote it in New American Standard or from the New King James, because I learned all my Bible verses when I was a kid that I truly know by heart when I was standing in the line to go into vacation Bible school back outside the church to get a lollipop, because I knew the Bible verse and I learned them that way and they stay within my heart. The New King James says it this way: all flying insects that creep on all fours shall be an abomination to you. So which is it? Is it the fowl or is it insects? The Hebrew word used is oph, O-P-H, and it means flying creature. Well, that doesn't help us at all, because it could mean a flying fowl or it could mean a flying insect. But what fowl, I must ask you, what bird do you know that has 4 legs? What bird do you know that has 4 legs? Well, I've struggled with this, and I've searched and searched and searched, and I do not believe, except for maybe a misborn animal sometime that the DNA got messed up on, birds don't have 4 legs. They have a set of feathers and a set of legs that they walk on. And so that's the problem. That adds to the problem. So fowl in the time of Wycliffe and Tyndale, that word meant, and we can look it up because we've got dictionaries that tell us what those meant back in the 1380s and the 1525s. They meant feathered, warm-blooded vertebrates. And that came from the Old English fugal, which came from the Germanic word for bird. We are still not closer to the answer. We're still in a quandary. What is it, a fowl, is it a bird, or is it an insect? The only flying animals that walk on all fours that is not an insect is a bat. And the bat has already been excluded. It was just listed that it cannot be eaten. It is not a feathered animal. yet it is a flying creature, and it fits the Hebrew word that it flies. But fowl do not have all fours. Therefore, the translation cannot mean fowl. It must mean insects. But here we run into another problem. All flying insects, let me name some of them. The bee, the honeybee, any bee, the wasp, the hornet, much more. They all have six legs. But here's the interesting thing. All these flying insects that have six legs, they only use four of them for walking. Okay, so not all flying insects are unclean, but they all have six legs, but some of them only use four for walking. By the way, what do they do with the other two? Well, with things like ants and bees, they walk on four legs, but they use the other two to bring stuff up to their face and things like that. Okay, so since not all flying insects are unclean, and the Lord's going to address that, here's where we go to the clean insects, and he talks to us that in verse 21. Yet these you may eat among all the winged insects which walk on all fours. Those which have above their feet jointed legs with which to jump on earth, these of them you may eat. The locust in its kind, and the devastating locust in its kind, and the cricket in its kind, and the grasshopper in its kind. So here we finally have clean animals. We find flying animals that walk on fours that we can eat. They fly, they have legs to jump with. So if they walk on fours, but they have two legs to jump with, so they can fly and they can jump, then the Jews can eat them. Locusts, grasshoppers, crickets, and those type of animals. And he actually says that to us. Locusts in its kind, crickets in its kind, grasshoppers in its kind. Because there's lots of variety of locusts, and there's many varieties of crickets, and many varieties of grasshoppers. And they are all clean and edible. Dip them in some chocolate or some hot sauce, or fry them up or roast them or whatever. They're clean. But the Lord returns to those four-footed insects, that if you touch the four-footed insects that don't have legs to jump, they can cause you to be unclean until evening. Look at here, verse 23. But all other winged insects which are four-footed are detestable to you. By these, moreover, you will be made unclean. Whoever touches their carcasses becomes unclean until evening, and whoever picks up any of their carcasses shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. Folks, the Lord knew that it was impossible to live life without encountering these unclean insects. There are more insects, or different kinds of insects, in the world and on the earth than any other kind of animals combined. How can you be unclean by these insects? By swatting them away? No. By flicking them off of your clothes? No. By killing them with your hand? Yes. By killing them on your garment? Yes. And how long will you be unclean? You'll be unclean until evening, which is what we call in our place today where we live, we call it afternoon. The reason why we call it evening is this. The day starts with the morning sun, okay? The sun comes and breaks through the sky in the morning. And it's going to set over in the west in the evening. Now, when the sun is exactly at the 12 o'clock position, right here in Jewish life, this is called morning, And this is called evening. Now, we struggle with this because we call our evening down here after the sun has gone down. We're in the evening. But the evening for Jews started at high noon when the sun just tipped over and began to settle down. That is the evening. This morning is before. So, with that, we get the picture that once they touch the stuff, they've got to clean their clothes and all of that. Once these insects, fine insects, they touch it, they're going to be unclean until evening is over, and they've got to get to the next day after they've cleaned their clothes and everything. So then it's really interesting because the Lord returns to the summer to summarize his laws concerning these animals with the divided but not the split hoof and those which do not chew the cud. He returns. And many times we see this. They tell us a little bit. Let us chew on it a little bit. Chew on it. That's kind of interesting. And then they tell it to us again. And that happens in our Hebrew writings. Verse 26 tells us this. Concerning all the animals which divide the hoof but do not make a split hoof or which do not chew the cud, they are unclean to you. Whoever touches them becomes unclean. So here the Lord adds the first prohibition of handling these unclean animals from the land. So we know, and we've already talked about, there's the camel, the rock badger, the rabbit, the pig, which will make a person unclean if he just touches the animal. And how long is he going to be unclean till? Till evening. Now, in addition, the Lord put a prohibition on the Jews who touch the unclean animals that, get this, walk on paws. Verse 27. Also, whatever walks on its paws among all the creatures that walk on all fours are unclean to you. Whoever touches their carcasses becomes unclean until evening, and the one who picks up their carcasses shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. They are unclean to you. Animals that walk on paws are not only unclean for eating purposes, but they are unclean to touch when they have died. What animals walk on paws? Okay, just hang on with me here because I'm going to kind of run through a list as best I can remember. Let's start with the cats, the felids, such as tigers and lions, leopards, bobcats, etc. Let's talk about the canines. We've got the dogs in our house. We've got foxes. We've got hounds, wolves, etc. We've got rabbits, such as the hares and the pikas, the rabbits, etc. We've got the bears and the raccoons. We've got rodents like mice and hamsters, rats, squirrels, prairie dogs, nutria, chipmunks, beaver, muskrat, porcupines, guinea pigs, gerbils, etc. We've got the weasels, like we call the weasel a mole. We've got the weasel, we've got the badgers, we've got the otters, we've got the ferrets, the martens, the minks, the wolverines, etc. Now, not only are these animals unclean for the Jews to eat, if a Jew touches the dead body of one of these animals, he is unclean until the end of the afternoon, which is in the Bible called evening. The Lord then addresses the unclean animals that swarm and what they are. The first two have already been addressed, because they fall into the category of animals with paws, and they are unclean. And here they're addressed again because they swarm in great numbers. Verse 29. Now these are to you the unclean among the swarming things which swarm on the earth, the mole and the mouse and the great lizard in its kinds and the gecko, and the crocodile, and the lizard, and the sand reptiles, and the chameleon. These are to you an unclean among all the swarming things. Whoever touches them when they are dead becomes unclean until evening. Now, when we think about that list, by the way, the mole is a weasel, okay? When we think about the word swarm, most of us think about being attacked by 1,000 wasps coming at us like a cloud of a flying angry army. And we think of the action that it's bringing danger our way. But that's not exactly the meaning of the word swarm in this text. Here the English word was placed in the text and it meant to gather together in forms and in group, and to form a group. And when we think about the way, think about these animals that way, we use the definition two for swarm. These animals that include the mole and the mouse and the lizard and the geckos and the crocodiles represent animals that are seen most often gathered in crowds of like kind. They are unclean to eat for the Jew, as well as they are unclean to touch. But more than that, the mole, that weasel, the mouse, the lizards, the geckos, the crocodiles represent animals that can cause regular everyday articles of human life to be unclean too. Verse 32. Listen to this. Also, anything on which one of them may fall when they are dead becomes unclean, including any wooden article or clothing, or a skin, or a sack, an article of which use is made, it shall be put in the water and be unclean until evening, then it becomes clean. So anything that these animals touch once they are dead is unclean, and they have to be washed. Each of these animals tends to eliminate body waste constantly. They do not have the ability to wait and to let their excrement go out at a certain place at a certain time. It just goes out wherever they are when they're there. So their body waste goes out continually, and therefore they leave that waste on all items that they crawl across. So what are some of the types of items they crawl across? We've already addressed the problem of porous earthenware or clay pots. We were talking about after something's been cooked out of them, the clay pot had to be broken. Well, when these animals are found dead in the clay pots, these clay earthenware pots must be broken also. Verse 33. As for any earthenware vessel into which one of them may fall, whatever is in it becomes unclean, and you shall break the vessel. Any of the food which may be eaten on which water comes shall become unclean, and any liquid which may be drunk in every vessel shall be unclean. What in the world does that mean, and why do we have to break these clay pots? Listen, the constant evacuation of the animal's waste comes out liquid and watery and soaks into the pores of the clay pots, and they cannot be washed well enough to be clean. And therefore, the pot must be broken and thrown away. In addition, any food that was in that clay pot, when that animal is in there and has wasted its waste into the food, that food is unclean too, and so is the water is unclean. It must be thrown away. Listen, if it's wine or any other liquid, it doesn't matter. If it's kept in a clay pot, and if one of these animals is found in that clay pot, on top of that food or that drink is unclean and must be thrown away. But the restriction gets even worse than that. Even if these animals, these mole weasels, these mice, these lizards, these geckos, they crawl over an oven or a stove, that stove or oven must also be smashed and discarded. Verse 35. Everything, moreover, on which part of their carcasses may fall becomes unclean. An oven or a stove shall be smashed. They are unclean and shall continue as unclean to you. You can't wash them and then get them clean again at evening. They have to be broken. They have to be smashed. Why? Because they're unclean. Listen, most stoves and ovens back in those days were made of clay, and they were porous. And even with the presence of a fire, They cannot guarantee the purification from the waste of the animal, even if they're clean. They have to be destroyed. They can be deadly. It's interesting, though, because now the stove and the oven has to be done away with. But what about a spring or a cistern? Okay, not all things that these animals touched were unclean. Springs and cisterns were still considered clean. Still considered clean, even though these animals crossed over them. Verse 36. Nevertheless, a spring or a cistern collecting water shall be clean, though the one who touches their carcasses shall be unclean. Springs and cisterns contain water that's continually moving. The mole, the mice, the lizards, the geckos are going to come in contact with our springs and our cisterns. If a mouse is found dead in the spring or cistern, the water is clean, but the person who retrieves the mouse out of that water is unclean. Well, why? Well, because the water's moving. The water's constantly being filtered and all of that. The water's clean, but the animal is not clean. Now, let's talk about seeds that are sown to be sown. Seeds sprout much better if those seeds are soaked before they're planted. And if the seeds are soaked in water that has been tainted by a dead mole or mouse or a lizard or a gecko, the seeds are still clean to plant. Verse 37. If part of their carcass falls on any seed for sowing, which is to be sown, it is clean. However, the seeds, once they're planted, were not to be tainted by a dead mole or a mouse or a lizard or even a gecko. Verse 38. Though if water is put on the seed and part of their carcasses fall on it, it is unclean to you. So here's what that means. A dead animal can be taken from the cistern or the spring, spring water, and the water is still clean to use to soak the seeds. But if, after the seeds have been soaked, a dead animal is found in the seeds are unclean and they should not be planted. Once soaked, the seeds can absorb diseases from the dead animal, making these seeds susceptible to being deadly. Therefore, they are unclean. So now the Lord, after dealing with that, addresses the way clean animals can become unclean. Think about that. Clean animals can be unclean. Verse 39. Also, if one of the animals dies, which you have for food, the one who touches his carcass becomes unclean until evening. So the ox, the sheep, the goat, the turtle dove, or the pigeons, which die on their own, are not killed properly and drained properly with the blood out of their body, they're considered unclean, and once they're touched, the person is unclean until the end of the afternoon or till the evening is over. So the dead body of any food animal which dies on their own or killed in some way other than by a person that is intentionally killing that animal and processing it properly like they do at the altar, that animal is unclean to eat even to pick up. So think about that. Let's say you're driving down the road and you're Jewish and you see a goat that is out in the middle of the road and it is dead. You don't know how it was killed. It's unclean to you. You can eat goats, but you can't eat that one because you don't know how it was killed. It is unclean to you. Verse 40. He too who eats some of its carcass shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. And the one who picks up its carcass shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. So if you pick up that goat that's in the middle of the road and eat it, you may be okay, but in the Jewish life, you're unclean. You've got to clean yourself because you're unclean to evening. And just for picking it up, you've got to wash your clothes because you're unclean until evening. Now, the dead animal even causes the clothes of that person picking it up to be unclean. Did you catch that? So finally, the Lord summarizes the law for clean and unclean edible foods in verse 41. Now, every swarming thing that swarms on the earth is detestable, not to be eaten. Whatever crawls on its belly, whatever walks on all fours, whatever has many feet, in respect to every swarming thing that swarms on the earth, you shall not eat them, for they are detestable. Do not render yourselves detestable through any of the swarming things that swarm, and you shall not make yourselves unclean with them so that you become unclean. For I am the Lord your God. Consecrate yourselves, therefore, and be holy, for I am holy. And you shall not make yourselves unclean with any of the swarming things that swarm on the earth. Huh. Well, like a insect that has 1,000 legs, it's unclean. If it swarms, it walks. A snake that crawls on its belly, it's unclean. Can't eat it. Now lastly, the Lord gives the reason for his clean and unclean declaration here in verse 45. For I am the Lord who brought you up from the land of Egypt to be your God. Thus you shall be holy, for I am holy. This is the law regarding the animal and the bird and every living thing that moves in the water and everything that swarms on the earth, to make a distinction between the unclean and the clean, and between the edible creature and the creature which is not to be eaten. Wow. Clean and unclean. The law of the clean and the unclean foods. Well, we've got just a few minutes here, and before we go, I want to go on into chapter 12. That chapter is a short chapter, so let's go on into that. It's the law of concerning childbirth. And it's really the law for the mother of a male child or a female child and the time of her uncleanness. And from the law of this, we begin here talking about when a woman gives birth to a male child and how long and why she is unclean in chapter 12, verse 1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, when a woman gives birth and bears a male child, then she shall be unclean for 7 days. As in the days of her menstruation, she shall be unclean. So the Lord created females to have this time of cleaning of their female organs that are used for reproduction. And it takes 7 days for this cleaning to take place. And during that week, the females are considered unclean, and therefore they are not to have any sexual relationships with their husbands. Now, the law has not been given on this issue to this point in Israel. That's going to come later. Yet this instruction comes as the first indication that during the time that a female body is cleaning itself, the female is considered unclean. Now, this will be addressed again in chapter 15, verse 26. But we'll get to that when we get there. But this 7 days of uncleanness does not have anything to do with the time of her regular body cleaning. This is a regulation for childbirth of a male child. Now, in this passage, we find that the Lord requires a mother of a male child to be considered unclean for 7 days after the birth of the child, in the same way that she is unclean when her body is cleansing itself. So in the same way, but it's not the same reason. During the time of that uncleanness, there are several things that she cannot do besides the prohibition of interacting physically with her husband. These include restrictions on where she can go and what she can do and the things that she can do. Now, being unclean, she cannot cook the clean foods. As soon as she touches them to prepare them for a meal, the foods become unclean. Neither can she participate in holy things that are clean because her presence will make them unclean. Be that as it may, the uncleanness to this degree is only for the first 7 days. Why? Because on the 8th day of the life of the male child, an important event in the child's life is going to occur, and Moses tells us about that. On the 8th day of every male child's life in the line of Abraham and down through all the ages, the male is to be circumcised. Verse 3. On the 8th day, the flesh of the foreskin shall be circumcised. So the mother is permitted to be present at this holy ceremony because her strict 7 days of uncleanness is over. But even though her uncleanness is over, the law requires 33 more days of purification when a male child is born. Verse 4. Then she shall remain in the blood of her purification for 33 days. She shall not touch any consecrated thing or enter the sanctuary until the days of her purification are complete. So for following this 33 days, or during this 33 days, the mother cannot go to the tabernacle complex for any reason whatever. Now, in the context of Leviticus, it is the tabernacle complex that is consecrated within the camp of the Israelites. And when the text says, nor enter the sanctuary, that word sanctuary means holy, and it's talking about that tabernacle complex which has been consecrated and segregated for the purpose of being holy. As such, the holy would be the place of the offerings around the front of the tent of meeting where that holy basin of water is and the brazen altar. This law applies especially to the wives of the priest who would be allowed to enter that curtained off area of the tabernacle complex to eat meals with their priestly families in the holy places. That would be forbidden during the 7 days of her body being unclean itself and the added 33 days of purification. Now in verse 6, we're going to learn that upon the end of her purification, she would be required to present an offering at the tent of meeting. Therefore, proclaiming her purification and able to enter the holy areas within the curtains of the tabernacle complex at the appropriate time and present an offering. But the law of the mother of the birth of a female child is different than a male. Verse 5a. But if she bears a female child, then she shall be unclean for 2 weeks, as in her menstruation. Menstruation only lasts for 1 week. So with the birth of this female child, the time of the uncleanness is extended from 7 days to 14 days. It's the same kind of uncleanness during the time that her body is self-cleaning every month, but for a different reason. This time, it's for the birth of a female child. Now, in addition, the days of a mother's purification are extended from 33 days for a male child to 66 days for the birth of a female child. 5b, and she shall remain in the blood of her purification for 66 days. Now, I want to tell you, commentators of old, and you can look at them all, have tried to explain the reasons why the differences for the unclean and the purification law between the birth of a male child and the birth of a female child, but none of them make sense to me. Nothing I've read makes sense. I mean, we try to tie everything together. However, no doubt commentators have made much about it, stating the difference between the status of the cultures between a male and a female birth and the after effects of a mother's body or on a mother's body, but the tales cannot be proven. So we just have to take it as face value. Male, 7 days plus 33, females, 14 days plus 66. Now, to complete the law of the mother of the childbirth of a child, the Lord required a burnt and a sin offering, as we find in verse 6. When the days of her purification are complete, for a son or for a daughter, she shall bring to the priest at the doorway of the tent of meeting a one-year-old lamb for a burnt offering and a young pigeon or a turtle dove for a sin offering. Then he shall offer it before the Lord and make atonement for her, and she shall be cleansed from the flow of her blood. This is the law for her who bears a child, whether male or female. So upon the end of her purification, 33 days for the birth of a male, 66 days for the birth of a female, the mother delivers a lamb or a pigeon or a turtle dove, a lamb and a pigeon or a turtle dove to the door of the tent of meeting, and she is now clean and can enter that holy place, that sacred place, that consecrated tabernacle complex. And the offering is the same for a male or for a female child. The lamb will be a burnt offering, presented at the north side of the brazen altar because that's where sheep and lambs are offered. The mother will place her hands on the head of the lamb and kill it. The priest will catch some of the blood, sprinkle it around the offering, pour the rest at the basin of the altar. He will then stoke the fire. The mother will take the skin off and skin that animal and cut the lamb up. The legs and the entrails will be washed in the basin of water, and the whole animal, every part of it except for the hide, is put on the brazen altar where it is burnt all night long until it is down to ashes. The priest will be then given the hide. Then the turtle dove or the pigeon will be given to the priest at the west side of the brazen altar, where he will wring the neck of the first one but not tear it off. He will sprinkle some of the blood around the altar. He'll tear off the wings, and he'll take the wings and the feathers and the crop and throw them down into the coals and the ashes. And then he'll lay the bird up on the brazen altar where it will be burnt, and it is a sin offering. We know these things because we've studied the offerings. We don't have to look them up. Now, this passage will become especially important in timing the birth of Jesus. He was born in Bethlehem, you remember, and the family stayed there for the eighth day when Jesus was circumcised. The night of the eighth day, the angel told Joseph to take his family to Egypt, which, by the way, was not very far away, to get across the Egyptian line, to escape the wrath of Herod. So Joseph, Mary, and Jesus left in the middle of the night. Now in the days that followed, the babies in Bethlehem were killed when Herod sent an army to kill them. Herod also kills his son and that son's mother. Herod then dies on April the 4th of 4 BC. Joseph is then told by an angel that he can return to Israel because Herod is dead. 33 days after the circumcision of Jesus, they head for Egypt. 33 days later, sometime in the middle of that, Herod has died. Joseph, Mary, and Jesus arrive at the temple in Jerusalem with her purification offerings. It would have taken the family at least 3 days to travel from the border of Egypt to Israel, to Jerusalem. What is the conclusion? The conclusion is this. The birth of Jesus had to occur in March of 4 BC in order for all the days to fall in line with this law of purification offering at the temple in Jerusalem. But that is for another story. If you want to hear more than that, go to my study in Luke. But not every female could afford a lamb to give as a purification offering. So just as with most of the required offerings, the Lord always has an alternative for an offering in case the person is poor. And here we look at this in verse 8. But if she cannot afford a lamb, then she shall take 2 turtle doves and 2 young pigeons, one for the burnt offering, the other for the sin offering, and the priest shall make atonement for her, and she will be clean. So because we know the offerings presented in chapters 1 through chapter 7, with this alternative offering, the head of the first bird is snapped, but it's not taken off, and yet the crop is removed, blood is spilt out, the head is broken back of its head and still held on, the front's nipped, blood spilled out. The head of the second bird is wrung completely off because it's a burnt offering, and they're put on the brazen altar, and they're all burned to a crisp. The feathers and the crop and is put down into the coals and the ashes where that goes. And they were totally, because it's a burnt offering and a sin offering of birds. So that we already know. Now I've got to get to this one next thing for you. Next, Moses covers with the Lord covers the law of dealing with leprosy. And it is a huge section of this book, leprosy. Why? Because they're fixing or about to face it as they go off to take the promised land the first time, which they're not successful. But leprosy is going to happen in the camp along the way, and we'll deal with that in our next lesson. Lord, thank you for the reading of God's word, and I ask your blessing upon it. In your name, amen and amen.